Tonight's podcast brought to you by Alpha Insurance with Talisa Shackle. She understands the importance of building a long-term customer relationship while offering the same level of service you would expect and wants you to feel confident, informed, and satisfied with your choices. When searching for home, auto, and life insurance, visit Talisa at her Harley Pond Alpha location or contact her at 256-796-1093. Tonight, we are joined by Mr. Ken Burcham. Ken played at Brewer back in the 70s. He went to Union Hill before he went on to Brewer. He also lives just really close to the school currently at Union Hill. And he taught at Wallace. He did a number of years broadcasting all kinds of sporting events and games for radio, and he also keeps all of us up to date on some of the scores in Marshall County to help us during our broadcast. And with that, Ken, welcome you into the program tonight.
Thank you, Randy. Appreciate you having me. I was excited about this for the moment we talked about it, simply because it's a chance to relay some of the stories I heard virtually all my life. I started going to ball games with my father when he was refereeing when I was kindergarten age. Of course, we didn't have kindergarten back then. They didn't realize we needed, I guess. But from that point forward, I was sold on the game of basketball.
Well, like I said, basketball was so important also in Morgan County. Many of the smaller schools didn't have football teams, and basketball was their primary sport.
Right. The thing that a lot of people may not recall was that when they realized the consolidation was coming, that Priceville and Kateka fielded teams for a year or maybe two before the realization of Brewer came to be. And that meant that there were a lot of kids coming there that had never been over with a football, the idea of hiking it, catching it, throwing it, or whatever. It was a new concept for a lot of people.
You know, one thing you had mentioned as we talked, the playoff, the overview we discussed was so different back in the 40s, 50s, 60s. And also, one thing I was unaware, that girls' basketball really didn't truly begin as a sanctioned sport until in the 70s.
That's correct. Without going in and to too many details and being too disparaging to some folks that had the world pass them by, they did not allow girls to play basketball sanctioned by the High School Athletic Association and or being affiliated with the schools until 1976. So that's relatively soon. That's one of the reasons that we've had a hard time competing outside the boundaries of the state, because even when that started, Tennessee had been playing basketball with girls for over 100 years. So it takes some generations to catch up. And we've now reached a point where grandma and great-grandma were some of those trailblazers for the kids that are playing today.
You know, actually, that would have been, when you were going to school, would have been some of the first sanctioned teams.
That's right. And Morgan County only had Danville, Brewer, and I think Decatur kicked in there along the way. But I can tell you how far things have come. Of course, the game has been competing for a state title in various forms for over 104 years with the boys. So you can see how contracted it is by comparison with the women.
Well, go ahead and lead us through how the game had changed with the playoffs and everything as compared to Morgan County basketball back in the 40s, 50s, and 60s.
All right, let's go all the way back to the inception of a so-called state tournament. Started out as an invitational tournament in 1921, and I think 27 schools went to the Montgomery area to compete for that title, and at that time, Carver Birmingham, which later became Phillips High School, won the whole thing. Then in 1923, the High School Athletic Association was formed, and they had a tournament in Montgomery from 1923 to 27. Then they moved it to Tuscaloosa in 1927, playing as one group for a link to history and give it a level of comprehension of that. It was very much like what the movie Hoosiers portrayed. You know, in Indiana, for a lot of years, they have ceased doing that as well. But at that time, everybody came together in all classifications, and they played across all levels and sizes of school to crown one champion. And that's what happened for that. And then finally, I think somebody came to their senses in 1948 and marked a split into two classifications, a 1A and a 2A. And of course, now we've exploded and blown up to 7A. But that tells you how far it came and how what a calendar of time it was along the way. Chronology helps us to kind of understand why things are different. You can look in history books and see teams like Murphy, who made, I think, 12 consecutive trips to the state tournament. While that would be impressive, yeah, I kind of have to temper that enthusiasm, understanding that Murphy was the only school of their size in their entire area in the South. So when they played their first basketball game, they automatically qualified for the state tournament. Wasn't quite the accomplishment it might first appear.
Yeah, Murphy's in Mobile, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct. In that course, there's a parallel between that hotbed of basketball that came to existence in the 40s, late 40s, with our topic. We're going to start with Morgan County and evolve over into Coleman County, following a trail that so happened to have been blazed by my dad, Henry Burcham, or H.L. Burcham. Many of the people in Coleman County might remember that are old. But anyway, Morgan County, before Brewer came into existence, was a real hotbed of basketball. The five members of the high school association in Morgan County were Priceville, the Bulldogs, Pateka, Indians, Eva, Eagles, Union Hill Wildcats, which was changed from the Hilltoppers many years ago, and the Ryan Red Devils. Now, those were some fierce competitors. And I know from having played in those early days before Brewer came to existence that we spent many a night going to games or playing on courts that were oval in shape. Now, anybody's old hats knows what I'm talking about. But the younger generation may not know that gyms were relatively small, and people packed that thing out to the point where everybody's standing in and around that couldn't find a seat. And ultimately, they would leak over onto the corner of the court. So there was no corners to be played on. It was an oval.
Kind of reminds you a lot of, like, down here when they had a junior high at Welty. Basically, the players were standing in bounds when they actually threw the ball in bounds because people were lined at the doors, at the walls. You had three rows of bleachers on each side, and the playing surface went up to the walls and also the bleachers. It's really fascinating how, you know, the courts have really also changed from then to now also.
I remember in junior high school, that was exactly what our gym looked like, as well as Ryan's. Eva's was a little bit bigger, but they had posts setting up with the supports that were in your field of vision in certain seats. But those places packed those things out. And I came to realize later on, as I got those sailboats for feet, that I doubt seriously if I could have stood out of bounds with my heels against the bottom of bleachers and not had my toe on the line to throw the ball in. It was just that close, those places. You know, there were times, and people don't believe it, but you could shoot a layup running full blast before you know it. You looked up, you're standing on the stage, because each one of them had a stage at the end. And if you got a good run and go, you'd run, jump on that stage. Not intending to, that's just where you wound up.
The community rivalries were so important to each one.
Oh, absolutely. They were the very definition of what I've come to use in broadcasting in the past. It's a woe and sick'em game. You didn't have to fire anybody up. You just had to tell them who he was playing and get out of their way because they're ready to go for the throat on either side. You know, it's just that big a rivalry because you live so close together in parts of those areas that you had to see those people in town or in your communities as they cross over in business, you know, and even more so, a lot of people had family in some of those adjoining places. So you, it was kind of a family rivalry, and you know, nobody gets mad at one another than brothers and sisters. So you just knew if they were mad enough at it, just don't get in the way, you'd get hurt.
Who were some of the stronger teams?
Well, they shared that over time, where all of them had pretty decent clubs at one time or another. Eva probably had the toughest time at one stretch. They didn't win for a couple of years very much, but they all were very competitive when it came time to play them one another. There was no assurance you'd come out of it ahead when it's over. Now, Union Hill headed it off when they first had the very first county tournament. Now, their county tournament were played before the Christmas holiday back in those days, so that's how Union Hill wound up winning a 1949, the county tournament, and the state tournament in 1950, and it was the same team. They were the ones that went 30-1, and they had, among many great guys and great players, they had two of the most notable were called Shine and Bobo Bowling. And they were the ones that led them out there. And the coach was Delmer Bagwell. I've related this story to you, but not to the public in general. They went 30-1 that year. The only team they lost to was Ryan, who happened to be coaching with my dad. Of course, he made sure that Delmer never lived that down. But as a side note, they had particular fun out of Mr. Bagwell at his expense. And after he lost that game, the only game he lost that year, he went in the next morning to the principal's office and tendered his resignation. He had failed. He had lost the game. I don't know how many people wore him out for weeks and weeks about deciding to quit because he'd lost once. He wound up being a principal and a superintendent and a number of other things as years went by. But that was one little story he never quite got past.
Yeah, you can't even imagine a coach going in and submitting their resignation over one loss nowadays.
That's true, especially when he already won like 20 in a row when that happened. I mean, it wasn't like it was just the first game of the year he'd lost. And of course, that goes back to that being one of the arch rivals. And of course, they were ready for him. They had their neck bowed. They was coming into their house. And sure enough, they came back wounded. But it didn't ruin them, obviously, because they went ahead and won the state that year.
You know, I didn't know that. I knew that their colors, Union Hill, was maroon and white, but I did not know that they were at one time called the Hilltoppers. I actually really liked that.
Yeah, I was always kind of wondering why they changed it. What happened to it? Coach came in and just decided he liked to be named something else, so he went and changed it. It was trying to remember now. Earl Morris, I believe it was, it came in an early day, and he decided to change it from Hilltoppers to Wildcats, and administrators went along with it. What did they know? So that when they left that as Wildcats, that was one of those things that became a controversy when they decided to go into the idea of consolidation. It was kind of a bone of contention what would be the mascot. But anyway, that's another story another time, which we will talk about in a couple of minutes, by the way.
But, you know, I was looking Ryan over. Then, I'm sorry. Ahead. I was looking over Union Hill. I mean, under Delmer Bagwell, they don't list all the records, but he was 24-3 in 46-47, and as you mentioned, 49-50. They were district state champs, 38-1. They were 23-8 the following year. I mean, those are really good records. And then they were area champs again in 63-64.
Right. Yeah, they were constantly a top-tier team. As a matter of fact, I'll get to that in a minute, but the year that was the last year of individual existence of the high schools, all those schools were really good. Before we leave that early time, the irony of it was the Union Hill team won the county tournament by beating Ryan. They had beaten Decatur in the semifinals to win to get in and win the finals. The next year, Ryan won the county tournament, and they had beaten Decatur in the semifinals and then beat Union Hill in the finals. So it's really kind of an interesting thing. Those amongst the smallest schools in North Alabama dominated and won the county tournament in its early days. That's one of those things that always reminds me of the truth of the old saying, any team on any given day never been more true than it was early on in the county tournament in Morgan County.
Ocoteco also, they were area champs and made it to the Elite Eight in 67-68.
Right.
And Eva reached the Elite Eight in 54-55. They reached the Final Four in 41-42.
Right. It's hard to believe that those teams came together and didn't make a perennial power, but that's another story for another time for sure. But, yeah, they all did that. And that Ryan team that actually won that county tournament should have gone to the state tournament. But here's a little story for you. Lester Ralph was a well-known name and a star, a big fella. You can imagine somebody that's 6'6", 6'7". In the late 40s and early 50s, he was a veritable giant. He and his cousin decided on the day before the finals of the district tournament to spend the day in the woods squirrel hunting. Walked all day long. Well, guess what? When the game started, they looked like they had already been, like the old horse, been rode hard and put up wet. By the time they got into the second half, they were dying. And Ryan died right along with them because they were give out before the game was over and they lost because of that.
Oh, man. That is unreal.
Yeah, that's just the thing. You know, you don't think about it. We always say, well, kids just don't understand things now. They're not any dumber now than they were then. That kids do dumb things. But smart people do dumb things. And that was just one of those things, you know. Had no idea where they were. Thought for sure they was taking care of themselves. Now out chasing squirrels. Such is life.
You know, Priceville, well, the one that when I was looking up everything that you were discussing with me, Priceville, they were district and state champs in 50-51. They were district champs in Final Four in 51-52. District champs in Final Four in 53-54. That's and then state champs in 54-55. State champs, district state champs in 60-61. And then they area and state champs in 64-65. And then reached the Elite Eight two times in a row in 69-70. That is an incredible run.
It really was. Herman Myers was among several of those coaches. He was a really exceptional guy. Everybody thought that he would be in the running for the coaching job at Brewer, but was not to be. The one thing about that last year, we kind of walked right into that. Eva got beat in the finals to go to the state tournament. Priceville and Koteka had to play each other. And Koteka had the Winton boys, who were by reputation among the best basketball players in the whole North Alabama area. And Priceville upset them at Priceville to go to the state tournament. Union Hill went to the state tournament after going over to Woodville, I believe it was, of all things, had to drive over there to play Spring Garden and beat them to go to the state tournament. And then Ryan was in one. I think they got beat in the semifinals of their district. So we're talking about teams that worked their way right to the cusp of going to the state tournament. And then the next year, those 60-some-odd players descended on Floret, Alabama to try to earn one of those 12 jerseys. That's the thing. It was always the rub that all those people that had so much talent lost a chance to play at the next level.
Mm-hmm. Now, the Robert Ryan was the coach that had two state championships at Priceville. How is his relation to the Ryan School?
Well, that family was part of the original group. It's interesting to note that his dad, Mr. Randolph Ryan, was the coach at Ryan and became a principal at Ryan. And the gymnasium that they built when Brewer opened up was named after Mr. Randolph Ryan. He was the guy that hired my dad at Ryan back in the late 40s. So there's a lot of combinations there. There were Joe Jones, who was a highly successful coach at Austinville in Austin. Then Herman Myers, who had all the success at Priceville. My dad, and a couple of other guys that all became coaches in that area and kind of settled in the general geographic area. If you followed Herman Myers through his entire career, he had the dominant high school girls teams at Johnson in his latter stages of his career. But see, all those guys were players and teammates at UNA back then, Florence State Teachers College.
It's amazing how, really, when you look at how strong that was in that area at that time. But again, when you look at it, since they wasn't playing football, they really focused in on one sport. And yes, that became the dominant culture of the county.
You're exactly right. And it kind of makes me smile when people talk about playing basketball year-round and kids playing on travel teams. Well, they didn't do a lot of traveling then because they didn't have the money to put gas in the vehicle that only a few people even owned. So they didn't travel around a lot. They played every day because that was the only game in town. My most notable memory of a team like that, when we lived in South Alabama, Kinston was a 1A school, and the only sport they played was basketball. Well, UFALA was one of the largest teams and schools and was a dominantly good athletic program. But they went to Kinston one night, and they got the introduction to the difference of being totally dedicated to that sport. They came back with their feathers ruffled, shall we say, after having gotten beat 101-39. Had I not seen it, I would not have believed it. But it was that was the kind of throwback that when you didn't have a lot of options, they put everything they had into that one sport, and that was kind of the way it was here. You know, until they got to the point where they had that opportunity, they just played what they had. And most of the time in school, it was pretty much just basketball. A few of them played baseball. My dad coached high school baseball. But it was not the sport that it is now, of course, in the high school ranks, because it didn't get warm soon enough to play a lot before school got out, and the kids had places to go and work to do in the farms.
Before we leave this segment, let's talk about how close those schools are together and what also made those community rivalries so strong.
Okay. We can kind of go through that with the consolidation idea, if you don't mind. Okay. We'll kind of go that direction.
Yeah.
They decided through the geography of it that Ryan and Union Hill, which are about roughly 6 to 7 miles apart, and Kateka runs about four and a half miles from Union Hill. Eva is on the other side of the centrally located campus, but they're only about 15 miles at the most. Now, the stepsister of that bunch, if you will, was that thumb that sticks out when you put your hand up and put all your fingers together. They're the thumb. They were like 18 miles from where Brewer was, and that made them at least 23, 24 miles from any other so-called classmate origin. You know, they were so far out. That's one of the reasons they were justified in later on pulling back out of Brewer and becoming a high school, because they just didn't fit in geographically. So they're all within, four of them within 20 miles of one another. And then there's Priceville that far or farther from the other four.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Auburn came in with a bright idea to look at it, and the result was, after a two-year investigation, that academic opportunities would be significantly increased. And that, of course, was the central reason for doing it. The problem was the sports numbers and opportunities took a shot right upside the head. Now, it added those programs and sports that you couldn't play at those smaller levels, even more so now since they have minimum numbers you have to have on a roster to even play football. But with the idea of getting them all together, you're all of a sudden, even if you decided to get really generous and have 15 uniforms for a varsity team, that would have been 15 out of the 60 that were coming from the five schools. And of course, that was the tragedy of it, but it was not important enough to kill the whole project. Anyway, the football came through in a very rough way. I don't believe Brewer scored any points. I think scored a touchdown in the eighth game of the year. I'm not certain about that. Of course, that goes without saying they didn't win any. But you're having to teach kids that are in the 10th grade. So they were 10 through 12 for a number of years. But kids that get there in the 10th grade and have to be taught how to get in a stance to be on a line or where to stand as a running back or wide receiver, then they're so far behind in the fundamentals that it took almost half their high school career to just learn how to play the game, let alone be competitive in it.
Yeah, I knew that they used to play some of the smaller schools back. I guess it was somewhat considered JV games at the time. But they, you know, they would regularly play Hansville. They would play Holly Pond some. They had a pretty good rivalry with Fairview, with both of those being somewhat close together.
Right.
But
well, the irony of that now, that was back in the day when they were 3A's and then they made 4A's.
Mm-hmm.
So not only were they played regularly, they were in the same area. Fairview and West Point and even Coleman were all in the same area for a stretch of years. And I know that for a fact only because I was in high school when that was going on. And it was also the difficulty or the realization that only one school out of an entire area, which consisted of, what, 8 schools, was going to go to the postseason.
Mm-hmm.
Brewer had teams that were 8-2 and 9-1 that stayed at home because they couldn't beat Coleman.
Know that well, Holly Pond. We went 9-1, and Susanmore went 10-0, and we sat at home.
Well, that's sickening to think of what gets in there now. The other extreme of that, some of the schools, that all they have to do is play their opening game of the year because they happen to be in a region or an area where there's only 2 teams that are in it to play any football at all. So your other opponent get beat 66-0 and say, well, we're the runner-up in our area.
You know, I talked with Coach Stevenson last year, and I didn't think about this earlier, but what you brought out and you mentioned Coleman was in that area, which made it very, very hard for West Point, Fairview, Brewer, and the others to win that area. And at one point, a lot of the schools formed a little conference of just schools their own size, to where they could actually compete for a championship.
That's right.
And
they went through and did that even in basketball under a different term called the Tennessee Valley Conference Tournament, which may or may not fit into what you're thinking about. But that allowed a lot of schools that normally didn't have the opportunity to play together. It wasn't any soft soaping or easing around, but it offered you the opportunity, for example, to play Decatur and Russellville and Austin and some of the teams in Huntsville are in it for a while. They went like teams like Grissom came into existence. They evolved. A lot of people say, well, what do you mean by that? Well, they started out with a 10th grade, and then the next year they had up through 11th grade, and then the third year they actually had their first senior class. They didn't just bring them all in and have 1 through 12. That wasn't how it worked. And that's kind of been a plan in the recent years to start new high schools, is don't just throw them all together, but let them evolve into a classroom and get a little camaraderie by being the top class from the time they're in the 9th or 10th grade.
Mm-hmm. I know there's been some schools that when they've done the consolidation, things have worked for them. Others hadn't.
That's right. Yeah, that's very true.
And so, you know, just because they put schools together and you've got tons of talent doesn't mean it's going to, in some situations, like for instance, when they sent everyone from Hazelwood over to Cortland to Hubbard High School, those were bitter rivals. They absolutely refused to play with each other.
That's right. You know, when they got through with that, you know, you may be saying this nicely, but I'm just going to lay it out there. When they were finished putting those schools together, the R.A. Hubbard was smaller than either one of the others had been when they went in to have their first classes. Ultimately, that was a demise and subsequently the death of the school. It is closed now. And it was because those kids were so bitter in their rivalry, they just couldn't coexist. So they went their various ways. That coupled with the idea that a lot of the industry that their parents had worked in had simultaneously closed, you know, the paper mills and some of those places. So it was easier to move because they had no choice to make a living, to go somewhere where they could find a job.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's get into the actual foreman of Brewer.
Okay. They started out 2 years after they had come up, well, it took a 2-year plan, and then the 2 years it took to formulate things, They had to do all the dotting of the I's and crosses of the T's. The obvious things were just determining what would happen and where they'd be. And during all that, they decided to put the technical programs or the vocational school at Brewer. And it was at, they determined the piece of land that was oddly obtained, but I won't go into that, even though it's relatives that caused it. It was put basically in a cow pasture in a place called Floret, Alabama, which did not even have a traffic light. Had a caution light after they decided they needed one. But I went through my whole life taking your life in your hands to cross 67, hoping you'd get to school in one piece. And it was the biggest drawback of the school to this day is it has no community pride for one simple reason. There's no community. There's a lot of landowners, but few in number and great in ownership. In other words, a few people own a lot of land around there, and they as yet refuse to let go of it so that it could be built up with residences enough to really consider it to be a place.
You know, one thing you mentioned to me was the students still identify themselves instead of saying from Brewer, from where they went to middle school, it's considered middle school now through, you know, K through right. 8.
Yeah, when they moved the ninth grade down, it began an evolution in a positive direction because it allowed them to have junior high football. You know, those smaller feeder schools couldn't have football teams because they didn't have enough people. So the thing to move it down there also allowed them to go down in the spring, the eighth graders get on a bus the last period of the day and go down for a practice, a preparation for playing there, and some of them could play. Some kind of rule that was allowed so that you could go to one school and play for another if you didn't have a team where you were anyway. The idea started out as getting these kids together to try to build that camaraderie and some kinship. I know that a lot of people went to Brewer with the idea, I'm going to be in a whole building full of strangers. Well, those of us, for example, in my day when we were in the ninth grade, we loaded up on a bus and went for the tryouts and the spring practice in the ninth grade. Now, there were some people that probably should have made the clubs that didn't. I always have a couple people come to mind immediately for that. But the positive of that was you got to meet some people who had been your enemies and you realized they didn't have horns in the back of their head. And they were actually good people and they were going to be your teammates. So when the fall came, you actually knew a few of those people strolling up and down that hallway, which is a big plus in terms of comfort. Because coming from Union Hill, we might have had 50 people going down there. But you throw that in a place that's got 1,200 people in it, and you say, oh, well, you do. you're going to find you a lot more strangers than friends. So you've kind of grasped on the idea of hoping you'll see somebody you know. Then you walk into a classroom that's got 30 people in it, and you don't recognize a soul in there. Well, you better be a very personable fella or you're going to be miserable for a very long time.
It was always amazing to me how large the Brewer School became. I think they got as, they're a 5A now, but I think they got as large as a 6A. Might even trip 7 at one time before Priceville split off. Which Priceville now is, what are they, 4A, 5A?
Yeah, they teeter between the two. Yeah, you take that, a 4A school, and put it into that one, it's already a 5A. You can imagine how many people be strolling the hall.
Much larger than the school that I went to.
Well, that you can imagine the culture shock take you and put you in a school that was a combination of West Point, Fairview, and Coleman. Those are amongst the biggest enrollments. You can imagine what you do to you. You know, it's culture shock. And that caused some very good students, reasonably intelligent people, to carry away and decide to either go someplace else. Most of those people that ran in Union Hill defaulted to go to ARAB. And, of course, ARAB then had to kind of decide, we're going to limit how many people we let in, or they're going to push us up to a 7A. So it's gotten a lot harder to do that now. But it's just an amazing thing how much those kids have to adjust to, besides the fact that nobody teaches there that going to expect to just give you an easy road just because you don't feel comfortable. I'm sorry, it's not the way it works. It was kind of a good introduction, though, to the college ranks because it's the same kind of thing. You go off to a college or a university, you're going to run into a lot of I don't knows, and it's up to you to get to know them.
What were some of the positives? I know that a lot of this started, if I'm not mistaken, the Morgan County School Board had a budget deficit. The state had to step in. But what became some of the positives of the forming a brewer?
Well, the biggest thing, obviously, was the academic opportunities. For example, in the science area, you were able to have biology and then anatomy and physiology, chemistry, physics, and of course in the mathematical arena, you had not only the typical algebra, geometry, all the different things, trigonometry, and they could have calculus, and they could have college level calculus classes now, analytical geometry, those kind of things. Of course, there's several other opportunities, but things like art and, of course, the band and having a huge number of people to play in a band, that kind of thing. If they could have bands, and they do have band as a subject at the smaller school, but they don't march because, you know, it's a little bit like having a church choir march. It wouldn't take long, and it might sound good, but it'd be a whole lot of moving around with very few people. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the biggest things. It allowed a lot more opportunity that more than offset in the mind of those making decisions of what was going to happen in the negative sense to the athletics. Because the things you did have, I always remember thinking about the facilities and how impressed I was with how they were done. And one credit that still remains at Brewer is how few times they've had to redo things. I know that I got there in the fifth year and walked down the hall, and it looked like it'd been a fresh paint job done to the hallway, and all the lockers were in pristine shape, and they were all original equipment. They had such good respect for it. And of course, James Tucker, the first principal, had to be given a lot of credit for that, because people would say, and we say this affectionately, he was a drill sergeant. He didn't put up with anything from anybody, and he didn't care who knew it. And in retrospect, that was necessary, because you come in with five schools, and any one of them was walking down the hall with four rivals. So if you don't keep a strong hand and a firm thumb down on everybody, then chaos would reign in a heartbeat. So there's a lot to be said for the people that were members of the administration and faculty that held their forms and their discipline so that nothing got out of hand, and any trouble that sprung up didn't last very long.
Tell us a little bit about the how they chose the coaches that would take over the programs at the start of Brewer.
I know there's a lengthy search for a football coach, and the more the candidates learned about it, the less appealing it became. They got some older guys who had been to the mountaintop and seen the other side that thought they could meet the challenge of it, and they learned very difficultly how hard it is to teach people the game that you would walk into a high school and almost make the assumption that most everybody on the field knew how to play. Well, that was not the case. So it took them a while to get adjusted to that. They did find guys along the way, and Wayne Shelton in my era did a miraculous job. Now, they did the same kind of search in basketball, but it was a whole different mentality, because all of them played well, knew the game. So the standard of who they wanted was much different. I know there were four or five major candidates. Unfortunately, politics then, as it does now, ruled the day. And they kind of shunned away from hiring any one of the guys from the feeder schools. And yet, in the end, they did just that. Wallace Sanders was hired, who had been a basketball coach at Union Hill. One of the reasons I think that they picked him is that he had a reputation, and rightly so, of being a great fundamental coach. There were probably very few people that ever coached the game that prepared better than he did. When you got to the game, it was a different story. I'll leave it at
that. Just the adjustments just didn't happen at the spur of the moment, I take it.
Now, I'll make a vague reference for you. And it basically is this. If anybody saw Archie Bunker encounter his son-in-law, his favorite nickname would be apropos in the relationship to what he did on the sideline.
Okay. Totally understand. Well, we've kind of taken it from going back to the beginning, just an overview, and then the beginning of girls basketball. But now let's talk a little bit about girls basketball too at Brewer.
Okay.
Tell us a little bit how that began, because like I said, that came in at that period of time also.
Well, a very short backstory, a Reader's Digest condensed version. There was a particular state board member who felt that women playing sports in high school was unladylike. And she held firm until her passing. She resigned and died shortly thereafter, and the floodgates opened saying that, why can't girls play? And everybody looked around, and only a dissenting voice was no longer there. So in 1975-76, they decided to put the wheels in motion to get that done, and it began to show up in the 76-77 season. And thereon, when Brewer started out, it was basically a bunch of faculty members got in the room, and I don't know if they drew straws or what, but whoever got the short one wound up being the coach. And that was really because they didn't have opportunity to go through a proper sequence of trying to find somebody to do that. And to be honest with you, who would you have asked? Because none of them in our area had ever done that before. So you'd had to go to Tennessee. And most of those people would have said, why would we leave a program that's been going on for generations to go to a place where we're going to have to explain to them how the game is played? So it was a monumental thing. It was along the lines of the football. You know, just, they'd been playing basketball, but it'd been such different rules.
As a matter of fact, in a lot of the beginning of girls basketball, even in Coleman County, it was the boys' football coaches that would take the girls' teams.
And it's
because you, like you said, it was just they were just starting. There was no formal coaching coach searches. So basically a lot of times if you came in to be the head football coach, your second assignment was going to be to coach girls basketball.
That's true. You know, in fairness to history, girls once upon a time did play basketball in North Alabama. And they played it sanctioned with the schools, but there were going to be only the participants would be close to 100 years old because it was done in the 20s. But a lot of the chaos was going on about organizing and whatever, and it hadn't quite come to fruition. But they were playing what amounted to a six-person team. They had two people on the offensive end, two in the middle of the floor, and two on the defensive end. And never the twain shall meet. They were not allowed to swap places. If you were on the offensive end, those two were on the offensive end the entire game. And the ones that are in the middle, which were kind of the transitional section. In other words, if you were trying to throw the ball to the offensive end from the defensive end, you could not throw it all the way over to the other end of the floor. You had to throw it to someone in the middle of the floor who would in turn relay it to the offensive end. Now, that sounds downright comical, but you have to understand, too, that they did that in Iowa, for example, out in the Midwest until the 70s. That's how they played. Some of the great players of the day in the Big Ten and the Big 12 and some of those back in the day, Pac-8, Big 8 back then, they played that kind of basketball. And then when they were allowed to play, they almost had to relearn the game because the rules were completely different.
I did not know that.
Yeah, my aunt Irene, was declared the best player pound for pound in basketball in Morgan County, according to Randolph Ryan. He told me a long story, which I will not relay because both of us would like to do something before bedtime. But there is this little story about her getting out there and playing with the boys. And finally, they got together and went and begged him not to let her play because she's beating them all half to death. she was very physical. And in her days at that time, she weighed well over 300 pounds. So you're talking about literally throwing your weight around. She could do that. But see, they played the game. But then all of a sudden, these people came along and said, well, that's not a good idea for girls to do that. I can't explain that mindset. I don't share it. But that's what happened. And that's why it disappeared for such a long time.
Before we close in part one, we just want to remind everybody we'll follow this up with part two coming up probably in the next week or two. Again, this is totally dependent on our schedules. Anyone that knows me knows that this is a very busy part of time right now. The girls are going into the area tournament in softball. They just completed the sectionals. Both the boys and girls won the 2A sectionals up in Fort Payne, and they'll be in the state meet come up next Friday and Saturday. So we've got a couple of days here, and then Bachelor of Arts service will be next Sunday night for all the seniors. So it's really a busy time, and Ken and I have been discussing this and been looking forward to it. And it's something that we felt it was really good to share, because there's so much about history once it passes and there's no one to talk about it, that these stories fade away. And so we wanted to get the opportunity to have Ken to come on and talk about it. And again, going into part two, we'll talk about some of the connections into Coleman County, especially with his father and different ones. And we look forward to that. But Ken, what would you like to wrap up our first segment with tonight?
Well, we'll use the excuse to go from Morgan County to Coleman County by the fact that my dad moved from Ryan to Fairview. Now, the rest of it we'll leave to the great mystery of the next time. But I appreciate the opportunity to do this. It tickled me to death to get to talk about it and reminisce. My dad used to regale us with stories repeatedly, but I've come to appreciate it. Now he's no longer here to share those things, and there's some really entertaining things to come yet, because there's so many stories to be told that don't get in print. They're not in the paper, and I have to share you a preview. There was an article written, I dare say very well written, in the Coleman Times that talked about Fairview winning a game by 1 point in triple overtime, and my mom never forgot it because the headline said, "Triple overtime win," and underneath it said, "Game closer than score indicates."
Hey, speaking of that, there was a, I don't know how, this might be something you might could dig a little bit up for the next time when we go over the about Coleman County. There was a, I'm wanting to say this was probably in the 70s. There were, in junior high, there was a double overtime game between Fairview and Welty. Welty finished the game with two players left on the floor, and I still think one of them was on the verge of fouling out in double overtime. Fairview had a player that scored 52 points, if I'm not mistaken, in that
I remember some tales about that. Yeah, I remember a few tales about that. I'll have to go back and refresh my memory, because most of the time, folks, you'll find that the truth is stranger than fiction. So we'll see if we can get the record straight on that.
See what you can find out about that. I'm drawing a blank right now. I'm almost wanting to say that Steve Cummins at one time had a photocopy of the book, the pages from the book that night. I think it was him, either that or someone else had them, was sharing them with him one time. But that was totally fascinating to, you know, tying back to that triple overtime game, like you had mentioned. And plus, anytime you finish the game with two players, if you've got one player to throw it into the other, but the other, I guess they pure and simply played a 1-1 defense. But if one of them fouls out, does the official throw it into them, or what is the rule situation on that?
I've actually seen that one time, believe it or not. They got down to one guy, and what he would do is fired off the defender and go get it. I'm not kidding. You can't make things like that up. He got worn out pretty fast. He held his own for about 10 minutes. But after that, he was so gassed that he'd just stand there and let them score, and then he tried to figure out how to get it in.
Well, Ken, it's been great having you on tonight. And like I said, I look forward to the next opportunity when we go into part two of this. And that involves more of Cullman County. And again, hey, I appreciate you being patient with my schedule. And I'm really thrilled that you got to come on tonight.
Great fun. Been my privilege. Thank you so much for having me.
All right, Ken. Have a great evening.
You too, sir.
All right.